This is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Episode 47 of the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved with the podcast on the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via RSS, via iTunes, via email to the blog posts and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes or blog posts. You can follow at Yes Music Podcast on Twitter. You can send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side of the website, or leave a voicemail message in two ways and appear on the show yourself, either by calling 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417, or by recording a voicemail straight onto the website using the record a message button on the extreme right-hand side. If you have a smartphone, you can download for free the Stitcher.com app and listen that way. And finally, if you have an Apple mobile device, you can subscribe now directly through the new Podcasts app without having to go through iTunes, which is a lot easier, so I understand. Last week's episode featured possibly the most serious chronology error so far. I made frequent references to the fact that the band were benefiting from the extended period of live touring before recording the live tracks in SLO in 1996. This was absolute nonsense, of course, as this lineup had only just got back together after Kay and Raven had left. This, of course, makes it even more remarkable that the band sounds so good on the live Keys tracks, as Howe and Wakeman had only just returned into the fold. I wonder how many of you noticed this howler. Paul Tomei also contributed an interesting comment on last week's episode. Do visit the site and find his full comment on episode 46. He thinks that the live tracks on Keys sound a bit dubbed. Now, I must say I hadn't even considered this, but maybe he's right. What I will be doing in future is watching the DVD of the SLO concerts. I'm not sure whether these are exactly the same recordings as appear on the CDs, but if they are, it should be rather more obvious if post-production went as far as overdubs. I would be rather disappointed if they did. Live, in my opinion, should mean live. Another supposedly live DVD I have my suspicions about is the Peter Gabriel's Growing Up Live. If you know about the post-production on either recording, please let me know. One recording I'm fairly sure is completely live is the latest Yes offering, in the present, but that's for another episode. Back to Paul's comments. He goes on to say that Steve Howe's timing isn't perfect, and that Rick Wakeman's parts are overdone at times. Fair points, and next time I listen I will make sure I keep my ears peeled for those aspects. Let me know what you think. Finally, Paul reports that his son attended a concert on the 2012 US tour. Yes, concert attendance is indeed a privilege to be handed down the generations. However, Tomei Jr. was less than impressed with Mr. Downes, and said that Steve Howe was struggling to keep up. That's my paraphrasing, incidentally. It once again brings up the two old dilemmas, faithful reproduction of the original, and the ageing of the artists. Personally, I have no problem with Jeff Downes playing the Wakeman, or Kay, or Khorushchev parts his way. As I said on the podcast recently, maybe it's time to move on from trying to replicate the original parts and performances, and be happy that the music is still being played live. As for the original band members getting older, it's of course inevitable. Again, from the YouTube videos and audience reactions I've heard recently, I think most fans are content that they've been able to experience the band at work before it's too late. It puts me in mind of the last years of Pavarotti's career, where he used to cancel a lot of concerts because he said the expectation was that he would be brilliant every night. When he knew he wouldn't be able to deliver, he would rather cancel than provide anything under par. Which would we prefer for the greatest progressive rock act of all time? Let me know what you think. Do keep listening right to the end of this episode this week, as I have a couple of very interesting items to share. Well, one of them is interesting and the other is a bit of fun. So this week I'm continuing with the live tracks on Keys to Ascension, and we have reached CD 2. We start with one of the tracks the band must find very difficult to leave out of any concert, Roundabout. Nothing says Yes more than those Steve Howe opening acoustic moments, and his performance here is as atmospheric and tantalising as ever, with the harmonics ringing out into the auditorium. The Squire bass line almost literally kicks in, and White pins everything down with a solid beat. Under the vocals, the main harmonic impetus is provided by Squire's line, which blasts along like an express train, while Howe's use of harmonics must be unique. Let me know if you know of any other lead guitar parts made entirely of harmonics, and I'd love to hear about it. This all creates the essential hook of the opening, a quite brilliant, multi-layered texture which sparkles and undulates in this recording. Wakeman is on sparkling form as well, with his synth interjections and Hammond patterns. Everything is incredibly tight and assured. In and Around the Lake features the rockier chordal Howe, combining with the wild dancing synth part to ratchet up the mood even further. It's a real fiesta. It's a treat to listen carefully and remind yourself of the quality of the piece, the way the wildly different parts are brought together in a complementary fashion to create this masterwork. The middle Howe acoustic solo passage is accompanied by Wakeman, using a much more modern-sounding keyboard voice than the original, but it doesn't stick out too much. Anderson and Squire prepare the way with the In and Around the Lake section, and the whole band crescendo is very exciting as you anticipate the coming Wakeman solo, which doesn't disappoint, especially when Squire adds his counterpoint, and then Howe and Wakeman enter sparring mode before swinging deliciously back into the chorus. A broad smile appears on my face as the band hurtles on via the wordless vocal harmony section, embellished by Wakeman, and then the Howe extended acoustic ending is taken up by the whole of the band for a traditional rocky blast ending. What a rush. And what a delight to move from that straight into Sister Bluebird flying high above, as Starship Trooper starts a few seconds later. Even though it's quite a heavy arrangement with, for example, much rockier drum fills from White than Bruford supplied in the original, it feels like you are flying high above, with Anderson as he caresses the sublime vocal line. All the instrumentalists are adding minute embellishments, and I urge you to listen carefully and repeatedly to appreciate fully what's going on. It's interesting to listen to Wakeman's interpretation of the Tony K. Hammond organ parts. It's the mark of a true musician that he adds these subtly and with an obvious respect for the original. He also showcases his mastery of the Hammond technique with graceful, unobtrusive swoops and more static but not stagnant chords. Wakeman may be known for his virtuosic keyboard fireworks, but he's also quite capable of adding just the right colour and texture for the musical situation he finds himself in, as here in Starship Trooper. The crowd clap along with Howe in the folk-influenced finger-picking section, and it's a lot of fun with great vocal harmonies. The poise and confidence of the moves between sections is amazing, and Howe feels free enough to add some bluesy interjections. At about 5 minutes 40 seconds, we enter the grand build-up section. Now, I've found other recordings of this passage haven't quite lived up to my expectations, so I can't wait to hear how this one is treated. What I'm looking for is an extended sequence which keeps me waiting for just long enough to make Steve Howe's solo an eruption of emotion and a fabulous release of the built-up tension. It starts well with Howe leading the way, of course. White and Wakeman come in quite soon, and Squire's bass is also much earlier than one might expect, but the general move in mood is gradually upwards. White lays down a straight beat, and Squire is all over the bass guitar with a great complementary line, practically a solo. Then Wakeman enters for a high-pitched synth solo in which he pirouettes and dances around the tonal centre in simply breathtaking style above the growing melee. Suddenly Howe's solo appears to take over from Wakeman. While not as startling and climactic as the original, it doesn't matter here as the treatment is very different. Wakeman answers Howe's solo with another of his own, and then Howe is back again while Squire and White keep the momentum pumping beneath. It's not clear who will win the epic solo struggle, and White ups the mood again and again with more and more frenetic drumming until the whole room seems to be rocking out and about to burst. Finally, Howe adds an elaborated slowing solo, and Wakeman adds his own keyboard voice as the band finish in true rock and roll style. The crowd seem to agree with me that the preceding 13 minutes were well worth experiencing as they go wild. So to sum up, Starship Trooper is given a brilliant outing here, with all musicians able to show off their virtuosity and synchronicity. Its emotional depth and staggering complexity of contrast and construction is able to shine through, making an exciting and deeply satisfying performance. That's the last live track on the album, so I'm now moving on to 1997's Keys to Ascension 2. the edition I have of the 2CD package has absolutely no explanation in the sleeve notes of what this sequel is supposed to be. Also, like the previous package, both CDs here are rather irritatingly labelled as recorded live in San Luis Obispo, but the whole of Disc 2 is actually the new studio tracks. Anyway, back to the live contents of Disc 1. We begin with I've Seen All Good People. The great harmonies of the original Yes Choir strike up, and Howe's Portuguese acoustic and Squire's rumbling and swooping bass guitar completes the lovely soundscape. Wakeman chooses appropriate voices for the recorder consort, and it's like strolling along the banks of a river on a perfect English summer day, with the breeze keeping you just cool enough. There's nothing to spoil the view or trouble the spirit. Just as you begin to drift away on the waves of positivity, the louder section intertwined with All We're Saying Is Give Peace a Chance appears, and the sound is full and on the rockier side, as the live tradition has now become. Then the dance-like treatment is brought in, and it's another fiesta of Yes fun. Great rock and roll playing featuring fast Howe solos against the beat-perfect accompaniment. The vocal choruses are blasted out by the choir, with Anderson sounding almost raucous at times as he leads. The next section, which has at times featured solo spots for all instrumentalists, is stripped right down with just a tiny lick from each musician, ending with a white blast to bring in the final recapitulation and rock-influenced bash. Steve Howe gets a bit tangled up in the last moments, but overall it's a great performance from the band of one of the essential live classics. Track 2 is instantly recognised and appreciated by the crowd as Howe's bending tones strike up and we pile into Going for the One with perhaps even more wild abandon than the end of the previous song. It's full of energy and makes me smile broadly as it cascades around the listener. Those Squire bass lines are a marvel to the ears. The huge range of pitch and movements suggests that they should not fit in here at all, but of course they do. The whole song has such an amazing sense of forward motion, and each individual part adds to that general mode and mood. Even if Going for the One only contained this and Awaken, it would be a masterpiece. Howe's solo is appropriately prominent here, and his string-bending antics are remarkable. This is so obviously and unmistakably Yes, it's surely the mark of a great band that their style is instantly recognisable. I've spoken about the textures created in this piece before. It's a maelstrom of parts coalescing to create a perfect storm of prog mastery. When the guitar emerges from the texture at around 4 minutes 50 seconds, and the rest of the band hold up the main beats, it's staggeringly powerful and deeply affecting. Even though Wakeman appears to fluff his run at the end, which would be an odd thing to keep in if there was any overdubbing going on, it's still a great performance, and I can't wait to hear what the remaining tracks have to offer. There's still Time and a Word, Close to the Edge, and Turn of the Century to go. But that's about it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. Just before I go, I mentioned at the start of the episode that there were a couple of interesting items. The first is that I registered a couple of domain names this week, one in response to a tweet by Ken Fuller. The other one is a geeky Yes-related domain. So here's a challenge and a bit of fun. See if you can find the domain I've registered. If you can, there's a message on the page which, if you drop an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, you'll get no prize, but a lot of admiration from all, I'm sure. And I'll mention you on next week's episode. Just type into a browser www. And then the domain name you think it is, and see if you're right. If you need some clues, it's something to do with Yes, but only the slightly more well-informed fans would be able to guess it. It's a bit obscure. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you will definitely have heard me mentioning it, and you'll recognise it instantly. The other much more important and exciting announcement is that I've been thinking about the idea of a live internet-based prog rock festival, and I've managed to persuade a certain prog rock outfit to be guinea pigs. So I'm planning to broadcast a live session by this band to my YouTube channel as soon as we can make it happen. I don't want to announce who the band is just yet, in case they don't want me to, or if it all falls flat on its face. But do keep watching this space for developments. Next week, I'm going to complete the look at the live tracks on Keys to Ascension. In the meantime, please get involved by leaving a comment on the blog at yesmusicpodcast.com, sending a tweet or direct message to @yesmusicpodcast on Twitter, sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, uploading an audio file or recording a voice message via the buttons on the site, or by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, The answer is yes.